C.S. Lewis considered Psalm 19 one of the most beautifully written in English as well as in Hebrew Psalms. Psalm 19, and here's how it goes. I want to read it through first, and then we'll talk about the meanings and the various hidden things that are lying in it. He starts off in verse 1, "The heavens are telling the glory of God, and their expanse is declaring the work of his hands. Day to day pours forth speech." I'm reading this in the New American Standard Version. "And night to night reveals knowledge. There is no speech, nor are there words." They don't say anything. You don't hear any sounds. "Their voice is not heard. Their line has gone out through all the earth, and their utterance to the end of the world. In them he has placed a tent for the sun, which is as a bridegroom coming out of his chamber. It rejoices as a strong man to run his course. Its rising is from one end of the heavens, and its circuit to the other end of them. There is nothing hidden from its heat. The law of the eternal is perfect, restoring the soul. The testimony of the eternal is sure, making wise the simple. The precepts of the eternal are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandment of the eternal is pure, enlightening the eyes. The fear of the eternal is clean, enduring forever. The judgments of the eternal are true. They are righteous altogether. They are more desirable than gold, yes, than much fine gold, sweeter also than honey and the drippings of the honeycomb. Moreover, by them your servant is warned. In keeping them, there is great reward. Who can discern his own errors? Acquit me of hidden faults. Also, keep back your servant from presumptuous sins. Let them not rule over me. Then I will be blameless, and I shall be acquitted of the great transgression. Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in your sight, O Eternal, my rock and my redeemer." That's the psalm. That's how you read it. And you notice in verse 1, the heavens are telling the glory of God. And the Greek and the Hebrew word here for God is El. El is the God of creation. Elohim in the beginning was the beginning God. Elohim created the heavens and the earth. El is the God of creation. The heavens are telling the glory of God. So this is a natural revelation. In the book of Romans, the Apostle Paul mentions this in Romans 1, verse 19. He says, "Because that which is known about God is evident within them. For God made it evident to them. For since the creation of the world, the invisible attributes," his invisible attributes, "his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood through what has been made, so that they are without excuse." In other words, God has given a witness to all mankind, all human beings, all over the world, through the creation that he has made. You look up into the heavens, and now, of course, we got the Hubble telescope that'll go farther and further into the far reaches of the universe. And the longer and the more we see and the more we know, the bigger it is. It just keeps expanding. We are in the galaxy called the Milky Way, but there are hundreds of galaxies. And you know how big this galaxy is? To go from one end of it to another, it takes you, if you travel the speed of light, 100,000 years to get from one end of this galaxy to the other end of this in our galaxy. And there are hundreds of galaxies going out and expanding. And we are one of the smaller ones. So you see, as people can see up into the heavens, They see these things, these vast expanses. You know, the Greek philosophers didn't believe in much. They thought it was kind of corny, all these myths about the gods and goddesses up in heaven. You know, they're cavorting and they're having sex with one another, and there's all this all this kind of foolishness. And the great serious philosopher said, that's just bunk. That's not so. That there's a one who has made it all. They saw that there's a cohesiveness in all the of creation, and they said the one has made everything. And everything is made from the one, and it's made of the ones. Everything is composed of ones. Of the, now, not the number one, but the one, and it's composed of the ones. It's something that's in everything. Now, they didn't know about molecules in those days. They didn't know about atoms in those days. They didn't know all this stuff. But they believed that whatever the one made, that one put it in all the creation, the ones. And they believed that God was, the one, was good. Because there's food for everything. There's water abundant. There's all these blessings. The air is fresh and nice, and the rain comes, and the trees bring forth an abundance. And there's an abundance of food. You know, almost everything you plant one tomato plant, it's going to give you an abundance of tomatoes. It didn't give you just one. It gives you a lot of them. So they said, you know, God's got to be good. And inside people, when they see this, people, if you feel healthy and you feel optimistic, you feel good. You want to do good things for the most part. Now, the Apostle Paul knew this, and he says this in Romans chapter 2 and verse 14. For when Gentiles who do not have the law do instinctively the things of the law, in other words, they're fair. They may not. They won't. They want to steal your stuff. They respect you as a person. If they do instinctively the things of the law, not having the law, they are a law to themselves, in that they show the work of the law written in their hearts, their conscience bearing witness, and their thoughts alternately accusing or defending them. Now, the Apostle Paul says in Romans chapter 10 and in verse 17, he's quoting from Psalm 19. So he says, so faith comes from hearing, and hearing by the word of Christ. But I say, surely they have never heard, have they? Well, indeed they have, he says. You know, surely most people have never heard. They don't hear about God. But he said, oh, indeed they have. And then he quotes Psalm 19, their voice has gone out into all the earth, and their words to the ends of the world. So in Psalm 19, we'll begin. The heavens are declaring the glory of El, okay? And their expanse is declaring the works of, or the work of his hands. This phrase then is asserting God's personal involvement in creation. God didn't just put a seed here. These are the work of his hands. You know, it implies God had a personal involving. And then in Isaiah chapter 48, verse 13, we read, surely my hand, this is what God says, Isaiah 48, verse 13, surely my hand founded the earth, and my right hand spread out the heavens. When I call to them, they stand together. The heavens come in. When I call to them, the heavens stand together. But more personally, Isaiah 64, verse 8 says, but now, O Lord, you are our Father. We are the clay. And you are our potter, and all of us are the work of your hand. So declaring their expanse is declaring the work of God's hands. So he says in verse 2, day to day pours forth speech. That's from the New American Standard. Now, the Hebrew word pours forth means bubbles forth. It bubbles up speech. Day to day bubbles up speech. Now that, you see, the same word is used in Proverbs chapter 18, verse 4, where it says, the words of a man's mouth are deep waters. The fountain of wisdom is a bubbling brook. It bubbles up. Okay? So day to day bubbles up speech. And night to night reveals knowledge. So it never stops. You see how continuous it is? The heavens declare the glory of God. Every day it's pouring forth, bubbling up speech. Every night it's revealing knowledge. Now, think about this. Who wrote this? This is a psalm of David. What was David? Well, he was a shepherd boy for much of his life. King later. And he would look up into the heavens and he would see all these stars. You know, on a dark night, he's looking up, he sees things. You can see that maybe a shooting star. And he just says, every day pours forth speech. Every night reveals knowledge. It's just continuous and it is abundant. Because he says in verse 3, there is no speech. Now, you don't hear anything, nor are there literal words. Their voice, you don't hear a voice. Nevertheless, verse 4, their line has gone out through all the earth. It is an abundance of information. And their utterances to the ends of the world. So it's continuous, it's abundant. People see the creation of God, it's constant. It never stops. So their voice is not heard. Well, it's silent. You don't hear anything. But they never stop. Their line, the word line means a sound. It's also translates a Hebrew word that can also mean a sound. Their sound, even though you don't hear, they don't have an actual voice, but the sound has gone out through all the earth. Their utterance to the ends of the world. So it's continuous. It's an abundance of information, and it is universal. It goes everywhere. Every human being all over the earth can see these things of creation, and it is not held back from any of them. Now he does a poetic imagery here of the sun. In these heavens and so on, he has placed a tent for the sun, which is, now he gives the poetic imagery, which is as a bridegroom coming out of his chamber. Here comes the bridegroom. You know, the sun comes up, which is a bridegroom coming out of his chamber. It rejoices as a strong man to run its course. Here comes the sun. It's going to run its course. Now, you have to understand, the Bible is not a book on science. But from the point of view of sitting there, it looks like the sun comes up over here in the east. And the sun travels, and it goes all the way to the west, and it sets. Now, that's what it looks like, and that's what he's saying. That it's because the Bible's not a book on science. It's not a book on mathematics. It's not a book on astrology. It's not a book on that. It's a book on faith. And he's looking up into the heavens and he says, you know, that's like the sun is up like a bridegroom coming out of his chamber. It rejoices like a strong man to run its course. Its rising is from one end of the heavens to the other end of the heavens. He didn't know that it's the earth turning on its axis. And there is nothing hidden from its heat. Boy, that is so. You get out there and nothing, everything that it hits, it brings that heat. And we love that heat. Many times we love it, although sometimes it gets very hot. But you love the heat. There's nothing hidden from its heat. The sun illuminates everything. When the sun comes up, it illuminates. It makes everything bright. The heat comes on to everything. Now, all of a sudden, he's talking about the creation. He's talking about all the God's witness from all creation. And all of a sudden, in verse 7, he switches. Switches totally. So we're talking about the heavens telling the glory of El, God, to verse 7. The law of Yahweh. He now does not use the word El. He uses the word Yahweh, the eternal. That is the covenant God of Israel and the personal God that he himself, because he's in that covenant with God, knew. The law of the Lord, the eternal, is perfect, restoring the soul, the Torah. Now, the Torah, the rabbis used to refer to the Torah, many of them refer to the, you know, a lot of people say it's the Pentateuch, the first five books of the Old Testament, but they also referred to it as the whole of all the scriptures. The scriptures in its entirety, the revelation. In each case, the Torah contains more, they believe, more than just law. It's more than just a command. You do this, you do that, you have to do that. It was a teaching. It was an instruction. It was God's general direction and guidance. It was to make you wise. You know, David wrote Psalm 119. He says, your law makes me wiser than my teachers. In Psalm 78, for instance, he says here, a maskil of Asaph, he says, oh, my people, listen to my instruction. It's translated instruction in the New American Standard Version because the word is Torah. It's the same word. Listen to my Torah. Incline your ears to the words of my mouth. Listen to the Torah, which is more than just law. So we translate it from the Old Testament into the New Testament. It almost always is translated nomos or law. Proverbs 1, verse 8. Proverbs 1, verse 8. Hear, my son, your father's instruction, and do not forsake your mother's Torah. Don't forsake your mother's Torah, your mother's teaching, your mother's direction, your mother's understanding. Hear, my son, don't forsake your mother's teaching. It's translated instruction or teaching. Many times the word instruction comes from the word Torah. It means instruction or moral direction, giving you a pathway. It's a way of showing you the way to walk. So here he was. The law, the Torah of the eternal, of Yahweh, is perfect, restoring the soul. Now listen to how beautiful these words are. The testimony. What is the testimony? It's the writing. It's the witness. You know, the law was put in the testimony of the Ark of the Testimony. This is in Exodus chapter 30 in verse 6. And you shall put this altar in front of the veil that is near the Ark of the Testimony, in front of the mercy seat that is over the Ark of the Testimony. The Ark of the Testimony is the writings that God wrote. The testimony is what God wrote with his finger. The Ark of that testimony, where that testimony was. It was placed in this Ark to hold it. So the Ark of the Testimony, the testimony, the writing, the witness that God makes of the Lord is sure, making wise the simple. Now, the word simple doesn't, it's not an insult. The simple means a person humble enough to listen to it. In other words, I'm not so complicated, I'm not so great that I don't have to listen to the law of the eternal, the instruction, all the information, all that. So the testimony of the eternal is sure, making wise the simple. The precepts of the eternal are right. The precepts are orders, God's orders. He might give you an order to do this, an order. The precepts of the eternal are right, rejoicing the heart. They make you happy. Take an order from God. Here's an order. Go do this. The commandment of the eternal is pure. And this has to do with a prescription or a directive. A directive, a prescription. God says, go do this. You know, your doctor gives you a prescription. He says, I'm giving you a prescription. This is the saying, go do this and go get this done. The commandment of the eternal is pure, enlightening the eyes. How beautiful these are. The Torah, perfect, restoring. The testimony is sure, making. The precepts of the eternal are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandment of the eternal is pure, enlightening the eyes. The fear of the eternal is what? You know, the fear of the eternal creates is clean, enduring forever. Now let's come back to the word fear. The word fear of the eternal, the word fear has to do with obeying the commandments and departing from evil. If you take Psalm 86, verse 11, he says, teach me your way, O eternal, and I will walk in your truth. Give me an undivided heart that I may fear your name. I may fear your name. And what was the thing that God said to Satan about Job? You remember? Have you seen my servant Job? A man who fears me. And what does he do? He departs from evil. He eschews evil. He loves righteousness. So the fear of the eternal means a person who wants to get away from evil and walk in truth and righteousness. That's what he does. So the fear of the eternal is clean. It's a clean fear, enduring forever. It's something you don't ever want to get rid of. The judgments of the eternal. Now, the judgments are God's decisions, how God decides things. The judgments of the eternal are true, and they are righteous altogether. Unlike human judges, unlike human judgments, some people rush the judgment on this. Some people do this. They're unlike human judges that judge on the seeing of the eyes, on the first kinds of evidence and don't get the other side. God's judgments are true and righteous altogether. The word righteous, by the way, comes from a Hebrew word that meant measuring reed. It was a standard of judgment. It was a measuring reed, how you measured something. So God's judgments are properly measured out. And who is the standard? Who becomes the standard? God himself is the standard for this measurement. So what a powerful, let me read that now. You see the parallelism, what a powerful repetition and parallelism that you see that God's revelation is redemptive, it's informative, it's prescriptive, and it is a reward and a blessing. So let me read this now all together. The law of the eternal is perfect, restoring the soul. The testimony of the eternal is sure, making the simple wise, or making wise the simple or the humble. The precepts of the eternal are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandment of the eternal is pure, enlightening the eyes. The fear of the eternal is clean, enduring forever. The judgments of the eternal are true. They are righteous altogether. They are more desirable. These things are more desirable than gold, David says. If I can have these things. And you know, you have it. You have it. In our day of printing Bibles so fast and quick, and you get a Bible that's all there. But in the old days, you'd spend a lot of money to get a copy of the Scriptures. Don't think very much about it now, having them. But they are more precious than gold. Even than fine gold, David says in verse 10. Sweeter than honey. sweeter than honey, and the drippings of the honeycomb. Moreover, in verse 11, moreover, by them your servant. Now, the first time now he's referring to himself. So David starts off about the heavens, everything way out there, and then he comes down to the sun, and then he comes down to the law, and now he's coming down to himself. By them your servant is warned, and in keeping them there's great reward. Doing keeping these commandments and these laws and these testimonies, these precepts, there's great reward. And then he comes down to this. Who can discern his own errors? Now it comes down to the inner man. Not just me as a person following the law, but now inside. He starts off with the heavens declaring God's glory. He comes down to the great law, the commandments of the covenant God of Israel. And now he's coming down to him. Who can discern his own errors? Psalm chapter, in other words, he goes, acquit me of hidden faults. Do we all have hidden faults? Do you have hidden faults? Do you have things you're not even aware of? You don't even think about it. You do it so often. You think about it so often. You say it so often. Take a look at Psalms chapter 40, verse 12. For evils beyond number. Let me read it. Psalm 40, verse 12. For evils beyond number have surrounded me. My iniquities have overtaken me, so that I am not able to see. They are more numerous than the hairs of my head, and my heart has failed me. So at times, we do things, we get involved, we get buried inside our own sins and evils. Psalm 139 says it like this. In verse 23, Psalm 139, search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my anxious thoughts. And see if there is any hurtful way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. There's David. He says, you know, who can know his own errors? Acquit me of hidden faults. The Apostle Paul wrote like this in 1 Corinthians chapter 4 and verses 4 and 5. He says this, for I am conscious of nothing against myself, yet I am not by this acquitted. Sometimes we do things, don't even know it. Don't even think about it. You offend somebody. You do something. You hurt somebody. You don't even know it. You don't think of it. Paul says, I'm not conscious of anything against myself. Yet, I'm not by this acquitted. I'm just because I can't think of anything against myself. But the one who examines me is the Lord. The one who really knows inside me. Therefore, do not go on passing judgment before the time, but wait until the Lord comes, who will both bring to light the hidden things in the darkness and disclose the motives of men's hearts. Then each man's praise will come to him from God. Each man's praise will come to him from God. So David says, who can discern his own errors? Acquit me of hidden faults. Verse 13. And keep back your servant from presumptuous sins. Presumptuous sins. Now, presumptuous sins are arrogant sins. They denote an attitude of rebellion against God. Presumptuous sins. You see that in the book of Numbers, chapter 15. It says this in Numbers 15, beginning in verse 27. If one person sins unintentionally, okay, if he sins unintentionally, then he shall offer a one-year-old female goat for a sin offering. The priest shall make atonement before the Eternal for the person who goes astray. He's going astray when he sins unintentionally, making atonement for him that he may be forgiven. So, you know, if he does that unintentionally, then the priest shall make atonement before the Eternal for that person because he just went astray. He didn't mean to, but he went astray. You have one law for him who does anything unintentionally, for him who is native among the sons of Israel, and for the alien who sojourns among them. But, verse 30, but the person who does anything defiantly. Now, the Hebrew literally means with a high hand, with a high hand, defiantly, like that, high hand. Deliberately, to defy God. The person who does it defiantly. I'm going to do it. You know? And some people would put a finger up there or something like that. I'm going to do it. It's a rebellion against God. It's defying God. You see? Whether he's a native or whether he's an alien, that one is blaspheming the Eternal. And that person shall be cut off from among his people because he has, what has he done? Despised the word of the Eternal. God says, no, I'm going to do it, and he's going to defy it. Now, if you're weak, sometimes people are weak. They break the commandments. They get caught up. They have habits that they don't realize, and they do some. But the person who says, I know what you say, and I'm going to do it anyhow the way I want, high hand. He has despised the word of the Eternal, has broken the commandment. That person shall be completely cut off. His guilt will be upon him. So David says, you know, keep your servant back. Keep me back from this presumptuous sins, these arrogant, rebellious, high-handed sins. Let them not rule over me. I never want to be like that. I never want to be where I rebel defiantly against God. Then I shall be blameless. Keep me back from that. I'll be blameless. And I shall be acquitted of the great transgression. That is the transgression of acting defiantly before God. So these are the beautiful statements. And then he says, let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart. So he comes all the way down. Starts off, the creation shows the glory of God. It pours forth this speech. It's in abundance, it's continuous, it's all over the world. But then he comes down to the Eternal, the law, the Torah of the Yahweh, of Yahweh, is wonderful, beautiful, more precious than silver and gold and more sweeter than honey and anything you can have. And he wants to, please, look into me, make sure I'm not doing these rebellious sins to keep me from that, let me be blameless. But then he says, verse 14, let the words of my mouth, this is a positive thing, let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart. Because I'm going to meditate. The words, I'm going to say words. I'm going to do meditation. Be acceptable in your sight. Now the word acceptable is a term used for sacrifices. It means if it's acceptable, you remember how in the beginning there with Cain and Abel, you know, Abel's sacrifice was acceptable. It was accepted by God, and Cain's was not accepted. To be acceptable means to be pleasing, a pleasure, accepted, favored. It is fitting. It is delightful to God. May the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable, sacrificially acceptable. See, the words of your mouth, the thoughts you think, are like sacrifices to God. May they be acceptable in your sight. You see, because we don't know our hidden sins. We don't know all our faults. I just hope that our words and our thoughts are acceptable in God's eyes. Because the hidden faults that we all have can bubble up. And I don't have the way to judge whether everything I do is acceptable. So he says, I want the words of my mouth and the meditations of my heart to be acceptable in your sight. Not in my sight, but in your sight, O Yahweh, O Eternal, my rock. You know, rocks were big in the Middle East. They are still big in the Middle East. Rocks are often a place to shade because there are, you know, absence of many trees. So you get behind a rock and the sun is shining. If you want a shade, you might sit under a rock. You might sit under a rock to protect you from the rain, from the wind. You might sit under a rock. And God is referred to as the rock. He's the rock that followed them in the wilderness. He's the rock. And there is no rock like our rock. The rock is something strong and powerful and protective. O Eternal, my rock and my Redeemer. God is the Redeemer. He bought us back. He brings us back. These words are some of the most beautiful words of all the Bible. Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in your sight, O Eternal, my rock and my Redeemer.